This is the Popmatic Podcast for June 8th, 2016.
Do you know me? It's frightening how many novels of suspense I've written. But still, when I'm not recognized, it just kills me. So instead of saying I wrote Carrie, I carry the American Express card.
This is the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. We're coming to you from Studio NPL in the heart of downtown Nashville. I am Brian, and joining me today are...
Randall Flagg.
That was Jeremy.
Crystal's back.
Yay! Dude.
Sometimes she comes back.
Yeah, yeah! Your main man, Mike.
I mean, no...
You may have heard that Crystal is back. Ooh. Why is Crystal back? Because Stephen King is coming to the Ryman on Saturday, June 11th. Ooh. If you got tickets, you might get to go. Bill did not get a ticket, and he is so mad he's not even here today. Few authors loom as large on the Popmatic podcast as Stephen King, which is ironic because Amanda and I have never read him.
I've read Stephen King. Don't bring her down.
Boo! Just roll wow. with the joke.
it doesn't happen very often. I have to enjoy it when it happens.
But everyone else in the world has, even my mother. Few authors loom as large in the world as Stephen King. Thomas Dish once wrote that Stephen King is such a cultural phenomenon that his work is beyond criticism. And who am I to disagree? Now, before... we celebrate the works of Stephen King. Crystal has to tell us about some library events.
Absolutely. So if you have an interest in films about war, come to the next Movies at Main screening on Saturday, June 11th at 2 p.m. That is the afternoon before you go see Uncle Stevie. You're going to experience Dalton Trumbo's Johnny Got His Gun, a movie written and directed by Trumbo. Now, I only know this film because of the Metallica video.
It's Morse code. For what? SOS.
But of course, Bill.
Yeah.
Bill, being our Movies at Main curator, is quite knowledgeable about the history and importance of this 1971 gem. So come to the main library on June 11th, see the movie, and talk to Bill about it after the screening. So my love of Stephen King began with a couple delightfully creepy, age-inappropriate movie screenings. When I was 11, I went to a slumber party of an older, more sophisticated girl. She was 13, where Creepshow was the main attraction.
We've never talked about that.
Which caused my catsaridophobia to manifest.
That's a big word.
Yeah, you can look it up. Google it.
It said cat, so it must not be cats that you're afraid of.
Fear of cat, Katniss Everdeen?
Not quite. Fear of cockroaches.
Oh.
Yes. But in spite of that, Creepshow remains one of my favorite all-time horror movies, and if you have not seen it, you're dead to me.
Ditto.
So
I'll just go sit in the corner.
I've never seen it.
Now, later on that same year, my family and I went to visit my aunt and uncle in the big city. Now, I call it the big city because they had cable. Now, the adults wanted us out of their hair, so my aunt got looking in the TV listings. Oh, here's a movie about a dog. So.
Benji?
It wasn't quite. Benji.
Yeah.
Wasn't Old Yeller either.
Lassie?
So, my little sister and I spent the afternoon happily scared to death watching Cujo. Now, the first book I ever read by Stephen King was not Stephen King. It was Thinner by Richard Bachman. And actually, I did read it when it was Richard Bachman, and he was not added as Stephen King yet. If you've not read it, it's the plot is an obese lawyer runs over an old gypsy woman, and her family puts a curse on him, and you can imagine the curse is he gets thinner and thinner and thinner.
I'd like that curse.
Can I have a curse? Is that an option?
So I've read just about everything he's written except for a few of his standalone novels and the Dark Tower series. It's on my list.
What?
Gasp. I read one of those.
Just one?
But where his writing really shines, ha-ha, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Oh, I see what you got there, Danny.
Indeed.
Danny!
Rob.
All work and no play makes Brian a dull boy.
So I think where his writing really shines is in his short stories and novellas. So today, I am strongly recommending the 2008 collection Full Dark, No Stars. Now, Uncle Stevie isn't joking with the title here. This is dark territory. Violence, greed, deception, revenge. My favorite is the last story in the collection. It's called A Good Marriage. Now, it was adapted into a film, which is pretty decent, but definitely read the story first. So a wife, she's been happily married, I think about 27 years. She discovers a shocking, unfathomable secret about her partner.
Her husband's a furry.
So I think we can all relate to this scenario on some level. We all have longtime friends, longtime family members, romantic partners, coworkers. Can you truly ever know anyone? Ponder that thought.
Wow. You made Brian, you made Jeremy and Mike be quiet. That was awesome.
Speechless.
I was trying to come up with a Gone Girl joke, but
everybody knows I'm a furry. It's no big
deal. So,
this is a fur positive podcast.
So I'm going to shut up now, but I just want to say I'm super excited about Uncle Stevie Come to Town, and I really want to read the third book in the Bill Hodges trilogy, which is called End of Watch, I believe. And now I'm going to toss things over to my fellow Creepshow fanatic friend, Mike.
And now, another chapter of my autobiography, tentatively titled Punstoppable. Catalog another piece of my heart now, baby. Or, of course, there's a cake in the break room. Long-time audio listeners may remember way back to the Kid Stuff That Adults May Enjoy episode, where I confessed that when I was around kindergarten age, I longed to read books by grown-ups. I waited all of 5 years before taking the plunge again with my holy Doctor Who novelizations, and it was a success! Oh boy! Being able to read about the adventures of the Doctor and Romana on my own was the bestest thing ever in fifth grade, other than when I convinced my teacher that putting a poster on one side of our desk was cool. So the whole class did it, until some dummy put up a Motley Crue poster. This was the late 80s. Eventually, my mother encouraged me to try something a little bit more daring, something that wasn't a mere TV novelization. At some point, I decided to read Out of
My Time. I'd already made my way through the complete works of Michael Jan Friedman.
Sorry, I don't know.
Trying to come up with a good pun. At some point, I decided to read Stephen King. Why? I'm not sure. I was a budding horror fan at the time, and there was a lot of movies based on his works. It could be that he was one of the few authors I saw on television. You know, there was one that there was even a national commercial for the completed version of The Stand that aired a lot. I know that my parents had some Stephen King books lying around. So I got Pet Sematary at a yard sale, and I hated it. But then I read The Shining, and my ever-increasing bibliomania was born. Thanks, Big Steve. Wow. The downside is I read nothing but Stephen King for about 6 months, and then got burned out for a long time. Occasionally, I do like to try Stephen King again to recreate that magic. And so today, I thought I would talk about my latest attempt at dipping my toes into a blood-red king-sized pool. The Colorado Kid. The Colorado Kid was released through Hard Case Crime, a publisher that is trying to revive the old-school lurid mystery paperbacks with a painting of a dame on the cover and, like, ridiculous book titles and awesomeness. Their opus, Say It With Bullets, by Richard P. Powell, may very well be my favorite book title of all time. Sometimes I catch myself just saying, Say It With Bullets!
There's one
for
called,
no reason.
There's one called Somebody Owes Me Money.
Yeah. The Vengeful Virgin. Good stuff. You maybe may have noticed that I'm going for a lot of Jeremy-style digressions so far. But, well, there isn't a lot to talk about the Collared Kid.
The originator.
Yeah, I just love saying Jeremy.
Jeremy style.
Under the bus.
That's fine. I've lived there a long time.
Windy bus.
school bus.
But there isn't a lot to talk about the Colorado Kid, as it is incredibly short, and I don't want to spoil it. The plot goes as follows. Stephanie McCann is a young intern from the University of Ohio who is working at a small-town newspaper in Maine called the Weekly Islander for a summer. At first, she found the locals kind of daunting, but she becoming increasingly enamored with the little island of Moose Lookit. Terrible name. And the much older veteran newspaper reporter she's working with day to day. Eventually, during dinner, she asks the founder and the editor of the paper if they've ever come across an unexplained mystery. The two elderly gentlemen relate the case of a body that was found on the beach about 25 years ago. Ooh. And that's as far as I'd like to go. It is a surprisingly refreshing take on the mystery genre, and there's no Kingian crazy killers or supernatural elements. Although, oddly enough, it was adapted to the show Haven for the Sci-Fi Channel, which was all about supernatural elements and very little mystery.
Oh, really?
Which, in not getting the point, sounds like the perfect Sci-Fi Channel project. Snob corner.
Pardon me, would you have any gray poupon?
So check out The Colorado Kid. You can read it in an hour or two, and you'll be glad you did. Stephen King also wrote Joyland in 2013 for Hard Case. I haven't read it. I'm sure Crystal has.
It's quite good.
Yeah, I liked it better than... No offense. Oh, don't want to bring you down.
Jeremy is increasingly dead to me. What do you have, man?
It's super good, man.
It's okay. I'm going to piss you off in the first sentence. So.
No! I'm going to go on a mic-style biographical rant.
I'm going to say dismissive things like Mike style.
This is nothing like Amanda songs.
No, Jeremy.
It's close.
It's uncanny.
There's such anger in this room. Y'all are bringing down my peaceful vibe.
They're afraid of the girl power.
That's right.
The podcast has become very contentious.
It's evolved since your last song.
It's to the point where, like, if I invite guests, I warn them, you know, like, just be prepared that the stuff you love is going to get knocked.
We secretly love everyone. It's okay. So we have long ago established that I am not a fan of the creepy or creep show. But that doesn't mean that I don't appreciate Uncle Stevie as a writer. I used to look forward to his Pop of King column that was on the back page of Entertainment Weekly. And I have a great respect for him as a writer. Now, our tastes run completely contrary. I actually tried to read some of his best of books throughout the years, and I mostly hated all of them. Whoa, okay. I made an effort, but no. But I think that Stephen King does something better than pretty much any other writer, which is why I think his books are so bothersome. He really excels at putting ordinary people in believable but almost impossible situations. He gets in your head and he makes you think, what if I went to prom and someone poured pig's blood on me? Or what if I was wrongly convicted of killing my husband or wife and sentenced to prison?
Pig's blood on them.
That's what they need to do. Cross-pollinate.
That's pretty much my answer to everything.
So I think part of what makes King so terrifying is that he makes you believe that bad things really can happen to you. So apparently there are monsters under my bed. Thanks, Uncle Stevie. So when I was little, I remember my dad watching a movie on TV about a guy who had to fight for his life on a TV show. Now, it featured Arnold Schwarzenegger way before he was ever considered being governor of California.
California.
So it also had, starred that guy from Family Feud. So
Dawson.
I was going to get there.
Maria Conchita Alonso.
Right. Yeah, I didn't recognize her, but I don't know her, so I mean, I just,
Jesse Ventura is a Captain America knockoff.
He is. You're not wrong. So I asked my dad what this movie was. He was watching, and he said it was called The Running Man.
In the year 2017, an innocent man accused of a crime has a choice. Hard time or prime time?
Sensational. Perfect contestant. I want him.
He must pay or play the running man.
On your mark!
I'll be back.
Go!
The highest rated TV show in history.
Guess they want us to stay.
It's a game between life and death. Can you lift? Arnold Schwarzenegger is the Running Man. He's playing for a prize. The prize is his life.
Out with the life.
The Running Man.
Now, kind of like Crystal, I was really only 7 at the time, approximately. So I probably shouldn't have been watching it. but it captivated me. And the story has actually stayed with me, kind of floating in the back of my brain to this day. And the first time I read The Hunger Games, which is 2 Hunger Games references so far on this podcast, if you would like to point that out. I immediately, there you go. I immediately recognized the Running Man in it. Now, Bill would like me to say that this whole concept actually goes clear back to a 1924 short story called The Most Dangerous Game. Which he has mentioned on the podcast before, so shout out for Bill.
There's a good Robert Sheckley novel from the 60s called The Seventh Victim, which was adapted into Ursula Andress movie.
Wow, fun fact.
I'm taking the Bill match.
That was produced by some name you've never...
They're going to shout at the Bell Court when they reopen. Okay, so The Running Man was originally released in 1987, and going back now and watching it, it is especially 80s good in the same way that Ghostbusters is good, the clothes, the hair, it's wonderful. But the movie is based on Richard Bachman's 1982 novel of the same name. Bachman, of course, is a pseudonym, as Crystal mentioned, for the Pop of King. The movie itself, I found it this time to be pretty cheesy. Every pun that could ever be made was, most of them.
Excellent.
With Anna looking directly at the camera to make it, like... Time out, here's a pun.
He's a master of that.
Yeah,
form of acting. I attempt to coin a phrase.
But I do think that Richard Dawson does a good job basically playing himself as a game show host, this time named Damon Killian. I did actually read the book. I thought it was better. The storyline is better, and it's written better than the movie, which should be hello. He's a writer. So luckily, the library has both the book and the movie, so that you can get each of them and decide which one you like better. So I enjoy Uncle Stevie as a writer, even if some of his subjects are a little too much for me, like Pet Sematary.
It was like a run of those Arnold Schwarzenegger movies.
It was right in the height of
his
fame.
It was great.
It's like it ended with
a golden age.
Last Action Hero, maybe. Mm-hmm. It was like the last one, was the first bad one. Did that one come out before True Lies or after? Before True Lies. Okay, well, maybe. I didn't see True Lies, but I know people like that.
You haven't seen True Lies?
I watched the striptease scene.
Get out.
That's all I saw.
That movie's amazing.
That's what I heard. Tom Arnold? His finest.
It is his finest role. Yeah. He might as well have retired after that.
Oh, wait, he did. No, he didn't.
Sad face.
Sorry. Speaking of Tom Arnold.
Jeremy.
I look like Tom Arnold. And
how?
He wishes.
Dumpy. I'm all dumpy. Right.
Yes, and. Okay.
I'm dumpy. Totally. And I seem like uncanny. I'm on drugs, but I'm not. I will also give a little autobiographical diversion, as that is my wont. I became a Stephen King fan when Misery came out. I was in fifth grade. I saw the commercials on the TV, and I had I remembered my mom getting his books in the library. I talked about that with it. I got my mama to buy me a copy of Misery at Kmart, and I wrote my name in the front cover and read it. And enjoyed it. And then I moved on to The Stand, which took me a year to read because it was, 1,100 pages. And there was a time when I felt like I could only read Stephen King's books because I was really only comfortable with his voice. It was like either that or like X-Men comics. It seemed like all I could read. I tried Dean Koontz and other people in that orbit, but no one else did it for me. But I moved on to other things, incorporated other books into my life, but mostly not. And today I'm going to talk about 2000's On Writing. It's subtitled A Memoir of the Craft, and it's that bit of memoir that turned me on to the book. I was assigned to read this book during an advanced writing course in college, and memoir had been a big focus of my work. So it was a natural fit for me to read, and also, the author.
What about the author?
He really did it for me, bruh. So the book's first section, the CV, describes King's early life, his influences, and his first attempts at writing. And the biographical details could easily be those of his own characters, give or take a croquet mallet or two. His father abandoned the family when he was very young. He grew up very poor. His mother was working various low-paying jobs before becoming the caretaker of her elderly parents. Sometime in his youth, King discovered a box of paperbacks in the attic, which had belonged to his dad, and he learned that his father, too, had the writing bug. And so you could kind of, and he kind of dismisses like the sort of armchair psychology that people tend to do, but you could kind of say that he sort of built his life around like doing better than his dad.
Interesting.
But he probably would say, oh, no, nonsense. That's not, but it's like.
Age past.
Yeah, it's, it seems.
I'm all face value. Mark Twain.
Yeah, oh. seems a little obvious to me. Anyway, the book also details his descent into alcohol and drug addiction, which is a vice that plagued him throughout the most fertile years.
Yeah, watch Maximum Overdrive, gang.
Yeah. Cocaine's a hell of a drug. This is a vice that plagued the most fertile years of his career. He says he has no memory of writing Cujo, which is, you know, one of his most famous books, and his description of like all the pill bottles, beer cans, cocaine vials, and bloody tissue, then the trash can at his writing desk. His wife dumped all that in front of him. It's like, you got to sober up. That is probably as scary as anything he's ever written. So what I like most about this whole section of the book, and I really recommend the audio version, which is read by him. We have it on CD. It's also on Overdrive. And we also have print copies of the book. There's this like sense of wonder, awe, and discovery, which comes through in his life as both a writer and a reader. Reading, of course, is a component not just of learning to write, but of growing as a writer. And the delight that he finds in a good story really is contagious. So it sort of makes you want to stop reading that and go read something else, or just keep reading. It's a wonderful conundrum. He eventually gets into writing advice and sort of do's and don'ts stuff, but On Writing isn't really a how-to book. It's not even really deliberately inspirational. In fact, he sort of says, you know, unlike a lot of books that say, like, write your best-selling novel in 30 days, he says, you know, not just anyone can be made into a great writer, that natural talent is a foundation on which all this other stuff is based. And a bad writer can become a competent writer, and a competent writer can become a good writer. But beyond that, you're sort of in the hands of fate, or as he might have it, Ka. The book's final section, On Living, a Postscript, finds King again skirting close to the realm of his own fiction. And if you've read The Dark Tower, then you know exactly how close to his fiction he's coming here. Here he describes getting hit by a van while on a walk near his home in Maine during the summer of 1999. And when I first heard this, my first thought was, oh no, he'll never finish The Dark Tower.
Wow.
Because I'm a jerk. Oh, wow. And it was
Vandal
only
flag.
And it was, he don't
write him down.
The fourth book had just come out, and it was mostly flashback, and it was great, and I was like, when's the next one coming out, man? Because I'm a senior in high school.
Wow.
But if I had behind
going to his hospital bit and going, yeah, like, I live, Steve, live.
Yeah, he's like, damn it.
I'll just put your hands at the keyboard. Just yeah. type.
What I did was I took him to a cabin.
That's right. Yeah, you broke his leg.
Yeah. Yeah.
And crap.
If I had behind the scenes knowledge of what he was currently working on, I would have thought, oh no, he'll never finish On Writing because it's that good. Even if you don't have any desire to write, or you know, if you don't enjoy writing, it really is a sort of an interesting look at the world of, you know, one of the best selling authors of all time, and not just of his life but of his craft. And, you know, I was at my computer at 10 a.m. the day that the tickets for this Ryman appearance went on sale, because there was no way I was going to miss it.
I'd like to say one thing about On Writing. I listened to the audio too, and I was so touched the way he spoke about his mom. Mm-hmm. And there was one sentence that just stuck out to me, and I can hear him say it. He said of her, she kept herself to herself.
Yeah.
You know, when she was obviously seriously ill, she didn't want anybody to be worried.
Oh, right.
And, you know,
yeah,
fussing over her. She kept herself to herself.
Yeah. It really is. I think that it seems like that book was like a turning point for him. For a lot of people, I think he always struggled with like respectability, and still does among some circles. But I feel like that book was like a turning point where like some people because he got like a National Book Award or something, or whatever it was after that, and Harold Bloom, you know, died in his sleep mysteriously. Or that's not true. He had nothing to do with the death of Harold Bloom. But you know what I mean? Like I think people started looking at him maybe in a different way. Also because he almost died. Maybe yeah. That was what it was. People were just going soft on him. But it's a great book, and it's short.
Ready to tickle my fanny?
All right.
Yeah.
Sure.
I don't know what you say.
Oh, yeah. We've got a little thing.
Library man. That's about right. You got it. Nailed it. Okay. Yeah.
About the crystal solo. All right.
You guys ready?
Yep.
Sure.
Crystal?
No.
What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
We've missed Crystal.
Well, the library might have it, or the library may not. But either way, it's really tickling Jeremy's fancy.
See, that was good.
I think you said either, too. That was good.
It was cool. I like it.
Just record that. Throw a beat on it. Throw a beat on it.
Yeah, we could just play that every episode. We're done.
That was awesome.
Oh, me first. Okay. So Tickling My Fancy is the publication of book 3 in Justin Cronin's Passage trilogy. It's called The City of Mirrors. Now, in keeping with today's podcast theme, of course, I'm always the A+ student. I have a quote of high praise from Stephen King.
Wow.
And I quote, I wish I could do his voice, but Justin Cronin's Passage trilogy is remarkable for the unremitting drive of its narrative, for the breathtaking sweep of its imagined future, and for the clear lucidity of its language. The City of Mirrors is a thrilling finale to a trilogy that will stand as one of the great achievements in American fantasy fiction. Now, it's imperative you read these books in order, so start with The Passage, which begins with an experimental virus and a very unique little girl. Mike?
Uh-oh. Remember I kept mentioning that tennis book? Well, I'm going to recommend it this week because not a lot has happened to me.
What?
About a month ago, I read a book called Sudden Death by Alvaro Enrique. It's pretty cool. It starts out with, like, a history of tennis, which I know nothing about. So it's kind of neat going like, you know, how did they play tennis in the 1600s? Well, they didn't have a net. They hit like these ramp kind of things, peasant ramps, made of wood on the roof. And you like bounced them like on the roof to each other. It's pretty neat.
What is a peasant ramp?
Oh, Jeremy said that they hit peasants with tennis balls.
He was just saying ramp. I said peasant because
I was in on the peasant ramp, so that was a fair question.
A wedge, perhaps, since, you know.
Yeah. I thought maybe they took the peasants involved. And made ramps out of the peasants.
A ramp is another word for an onion or a leek.
I was suggesting that poor people were once treated unkindly.
Class struggle, y'all.
As opposed to now. But you mean like a badminton kind of thing?
Sort of. But they were still with balls, but they weren't like the little badminton weird things.
Those are called shuttlecocks.
Yeah, what you said. See, I told you I don't know anything about tennis. And
I thought they were birdies. Well,
same. Same name.
That's what children call them.
I'm sorry, there were so many shuttlecock jokes that it just shut the podcast down for a second.
Yeah, and then suddenly there's a big pause.
We'll call them birdies just for the sake of the podcast.
Oh, my.
Overload. Which joke did you make?
A 10-ish between 9 and 11 match between Caravaggio and a Spanish poet named Francisco Quevedo, who I have no idea who he was and had to look him up. Apparently he's an actual guy. I thought that he had made him up for the book. Apparently he's a big deal if you know Spanish poetry. Eh. It's pretty neat. Like, it's kind of a history of Mexico and like how, you know, that Spain at the height of its empire basically kind of gave birth to Mexico, and how, like, you know, basically after like the Aztec Empire fell and like Mexico, like New Spain became a thing, like the Spanish Empire started to decline. I'm always big on like dualism, so there's a lot of like Hernan Cortez and Malinche are characters, and like Enrique talks to his editor and there's a lot of come back and forth. And it's told backwards, kind of like Memento, which I like. So you don't really know why they're having the tennis match until really close to the end of the book. Or it begins with Cortez's, I think, great-granddaughter. And then you kind of go back into where he, eventually goes to what would be Mexico. Also, just as a side note, Enrique is married to Valeria Luiselli, who wrote the story of My Teeth, which I also recommended earlier this year. So in a way, I'm going back pretty cool. But her book was a lot more about literature and naming and stuff. And Enrique is more interested with history, especially Mexican history, because they're both Mexican. Good stuff.
I think we would be remiss if we didn't mention that David Foster Wallace's tennis writing has just came out in one collection called String Theory.
Oh.
And for a long time, everyone's could we please get all his work about tennis in one volume? And finally, it has happened. And we all know my long history with DFW, but but undeniably, if you also wanted some other really good tennis writing, String Theory just came out.
You can also can't you online see his copy of Carrie that he taught in a writing class? Were you telling me about that? It's all marked up.
I think you can see that. I think it might be Cujo, because one of the things that's online is his copy of the syllabus that he taught at he taught at some snooty schools, and then he taught at some public schools, and his syllabus for a literature class at the public college where he taught, and it was all really super popular genre fiction. And basically there was one rule in the syllabus that was basically just you cannot make fun of these books or anything that anyone says about them. But it was Jackie Collins and Stephen King and somebody else in his syllabus.
I also think it's neat, just as an aside, that there's a whole subplot about the creation of tennis balls that are made from Anne Boleyn's hair. apparently, at least according to the book, I've been to look it up. Apparently, they shaved her head after, as it was detached. And they made, I think, 3 or 4 tennis balls with it. And they kind of introduced characters by how they got the tennis balls and stuff. It was kind of neat. There you go, Amanda.
Amanda.
I don't know what to
That's
say
right.
after
See,
that.
See, King of Creepy.
Correction. I think it's Carrie, not Cujo.
Oh, in episode correction.
Make the circle. At least it's not creepy like Anne Boleyn tennis ball hair.
Yeah.
It was a better lead-in.
Much like Stephen King himself, I do not remember reading that syllabus.
Okay, so now for something completely different, like I usually do. So I am not a big fan of All the Music Wannabe Superstar shows on TV. I'm not sorry that American Idol is over. I think I've spent about 5.23 minutes watching all the rest of those other shows with Simon Cowell in total. I knew about Fifth Harmony from their singles on the radio, but I didn't realize that they were completely manufactured by Simon Cowell and Demi Lovato for The X Factor. So fun fact, even though the two judges in the show made this band, they still didn't win. They came in third. Yeah, a big burn. So I've liked their songs when they're on the radio, but I can't really remember any of their titles. And I never listened to the whole first album. It's enjoyable.
This is Jeremy recommended Gallagher and was like,
but it's mostly forgettable. But ever since it came out, I have been enjoying their latest single, Work From Home. It's catchy, and it was released this past February, and it actually reached number 5 on the Billboard Hot 100, which is their highest charting single so far.
And I don't need no explanation, 'cause baby, your love I sent home. You don't gotta go to work, 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 but you gotta go to work, 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 work. You don't gotta go to work, 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 and my body do the work, 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 work. We can work from home.
Now, the group just released their sophomore album called 727 on May 27th. Now, in my mind, I would have changed the title to 527 for obvious reasons. But, I guess they were formed as a group on July 27th, so that's where it comes from. I get that. Okay, whatever. So I think that 727 is a pretty good album to kick off the start of summer. It's upbeat, and even the slow tracks move pretty well. As much as I like Work From Home, it's not my favorite song on the album. Right now, my favorite is Not That Kind of Girl that features Missy Elliott. It has a very Prince vibe to it. If you listen to it, you go, oh, that sounds like Prince. I also really like the song Dope, which I think is just on the
extra album. It's not on like the, just the regular Walmart release. And I wish I actually could get married again just so I could have this song as my first dance song, and it would totally shock my grandparents.
Nice.
Yeah, you have to listen to it. It's funny. So Max Martin, the Swedish music uber guru who Brian has mentioned before, actually produced a good portion of the tracks on this album, which explains the shininess. No, she's not on this album. So Fifth Harmony is on Epic Records, which is a Sony.
Sixth Harmony.
Which is a Sony imprint. Right now you can download Work From Home on Freegal. The whole album isn't up just yet, but keep checking back because I have a feeling it will pop up eventually. And this is a great album to kick off summer 2016.
You're flippa flippa yap yap.
The only X Factor I know is a Marvel Comics super team.
Woo! Speaking of X Factor,
haha!
What a segue.
You're welcome.
That's a heck of a segue. A little background on my tickle, my fancy. This week, earlier this year, the organizers of the Angoulême International Comics Festival looked like real jerks when they announced an all male list of their Lifetime Achievement Award winners. When they were pressed on this oversight, a spokesman, so they were giving out Lifetime Achievement Awards for people in comics, and everyone's like, where are the ladies?
Girls are dumb.
Girls are dumb.
Yeah, girls have cooties.
And this is translated from the French. A spokesperson said, the concept of the Grand Prix is to reward an author for their whole oeuvre, because there's no, what's the English word? Yeah, what's the English word, man?
Okay.
Portfolio.
Yeah.
The quoi?
When you look at the prize list, you can see artists on it have a certain maturity and a certain age. Unfortunately, there are few women in the history of comics art. It's a reality. If you go to the Louvre, you'll equally find very few women artists. So
thank you, French.
Yeah, what a d-bag. So that's pretty, that's kind of absurd, because you know, women maybe aren't the majority in that industry, but you know, they have recognized some women in the past. But the first name that came to my mind was Louise Simonson. She was a writer-editor at Marvel Comics during the 1980s, where she wrote X-Factor, New Mutants, and Power Pack, among other titles. And she held the editorial reins of the Uncanny X-Men during that title, some of that title's best years. Later, she went to work at DC, where she wrote Superman, The Man of Steel, and was a key player in the Death of Superman story arc. She also happens to be the cover model for the woman on the cover of 1971's House of Secrets number 92, which was the first appearance of Swamp Thang. And she co-created the villain Apocalypse, which was appeared in this year's X-Men movie, and I've just been...
I'm sure she got tons of money.
She got nothing for it. I don't think she got... No, actually, she does, because her... I read an interview. Her contract, they get profit sharing, stuff like that, so she. I think she's getting a little scratch on it. She did not get an on-screen credit, which seems kind of bogus to me, but...
It's better than Jim Starlin finding out that Thanos is an Avengers because somebody told him.
Oh, yeah, that's horrible.
Like, after it come out.
That's bad news. She's known to Wheezy among her friends... And I'm not her friend, but I like her stuff. And so give her an award, guys.
Corrections! I only had one small fill-in correction, clarification. Marvel Comics publishes the Anita Blake Vampire Hunter graphic novels. That's all I got. Anyone else have anything?
I had a minor one. Turns out that Californian Hunger, you can buy on Bandcamp from a guy named Hywel Payne. I can send you the how to spell that later.
The name that Mike is referring to is the Welsh spelling of the name Howell, H-Y-W-E-L. Usually this is anglicized and spelled H-O-W-E-L-L. For more information about...
Pain.
And walls.
King size pain. Creepshow news.
You can go to www.
Dot.
Library.
Dot.
Nashville.
Dot.
Org.
And our theme music is by
Adam Dean. Give him some work.
Money, please.
You want me to leave that in there? You want me to leave that in there?
Hey, we're here to pitch.
Yes.
Okay, I will.
You can subscribe to our podcast.
I'm trying to say
RSS feed.
I'm trying to say
iTunes and Stitcher.
Never miss an episode by subscribing to our podcast on
iTunes.
RSS feed.
Stitcher.
All right.
What are we doing next week, Brian?
Next week is, I think, Puppet Festival.
Puppets.
Puppet Festival.
Puppets Puppet Pride.
You'll never cut my string. Master of Puppets.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course.
Dr. Sleep continues the narrative thread that you started with The Shining. You said you were interested in finding out where Danny Torrance, the child hero of The Shining, was today. Where did you find him, and why did you go looking for him now?
Well, for years, you know, people asked me, what happened to that kid from The Shining? And I was curious about him, too, because he's what in modern psycho-speak they call a codependent child who's raised by a parent who is an alcoholic and also an abusive parent. And a lot of times kids like that grow up saying, I will never do what mom did or what dad did. And then they find themselves with that drink in their hand or, you know, with the belt to whop their own kitty. So I was really curious about where he turned out, but and how he turned out. But you don't write a book based on something like that. There has to be some kind of an ignition key. And for me, I read this story about a cat in a hospice in Rhode Island, cat named Oscar, who seems to know when the patients are going to die. And he's predicted over 50 impending deaths. He goes into the room of these patients and curls up on their bed. And what really interested me about this is the patients don't treat Oscar as something to be afraid of. He's a friend. He comes as a friend. And they never kick Oscar out of their rooms. And I thought, I want my guy Dan Torrance to be an analog of that cat. I want to make him Dr. Sleep.